I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
So the top line here is that the judge has ruled that the district attorney, Fani Willis, can continue on this case against former President Trump and over a dozen other defendants. But he does address this issue of an appearance of a conflict, because the big question here is whether there was an actual conflict. The defendants were alleging that Fani Willis, you know, not only that she had this romantic relationship with the lead prosecutor on the Trump case, but that she also benefited financially. And he had to decide, the judge had to sort of do this analysis. Is it enough that this just looks bad, that there's an appearance of a conflict, or did they need to prove, did the defendants, did Trump and his co-defendants need to prove that there was an actual conflict? Now, again, I say that Fani Willis can stay on this case, but also appears that the judge is saying that this appearance issue needs to be addressed before this can go forward. So this appears to be a pretty nuanced ruling, but the headline is that the district attorney and her office can stay on this case.
And it makes no sense whatsoever to me, does it to you? The judge admitting there certainly appears to be a conflict, there's a perception, but we're going to let Fani Willis continue her prosecution of Trump in Georgia as long as she gets rid of her lover, her special counsel she hired, and he gets off the case. So everything she's got apparently was built by the special prosecutor. That would be his J-O-B, in addition to pleasing Fani and taking her on various vacations because she paid him a lot of money and he had no expertise in the field, but she liked him. And, you know, love has its ways of making things work for a while. And then when, of course, reaction came out and noise and news began to surface that this was not a common relationship between a prosecutor overseeing a case and a special prosecutor hired. There were some, as we should say, friends with mutual benefits. So the judge is acknowledging a lot of that, and yet he still decides she can stay on the case. We got to break this down. And there's also a ruling that involves the Jack Smith case against Donald Trump. Remember, Smith is going after Trump. Reference how he handled classified material, mishandling. The same thing we saw with Biden, obviously. But, of course, there's a difference. One is Biden and one is Trump. We'll break that down as well. First of all, thank you for joining us. We made it to Friday, March the 15th, 2024. And reminding you, this is the first of 2 hours of Larry Connors USA back-to-back for you. Every Monday through Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. And also reminding you, when we're on the air, we are streaming video. News Talk STL Rumble, Facebook, Twitter, or Larry Connors USA, Rumble, Facebook, Twitter. Options everywhere for you to watch. And if you miss either audio or video, go to LarryConnorsUSA.com. LarryConnorsUSA.com or Larry Connors USA Facebook. And you'll find whatever you want. Listen to it at your pleasure. Listen to it again. Share it with others. We always appreciate you sharing. So again, the judge, part of the ruling that he had to look at, should she be disqualified? And he said, basically, well, I won't disqualify you if the judge didn't say your lover, but that's what it is. Nathan Waite is out of the case. So if he gets out of the way, you can proceed. But then there's still the issue, didn't she get some kickbacks? I mean, she gave him $600,000+ to do this case, and then he took her on a lot of trips, which she claims, well, I paid for them. I don't have any receipts or anything. I paid for them with my own cash. I have at my house. And I did pay for them, so it's not like I was getting a kickback. That's her story. And CNN addressed that part as well as how the judge saw it.
This finding is by no means any indication that the court condones this tremendous lapse in judgment or the unprofessional manner of the district attorney's testimony during the evidentiary hearing. Rather, it is the undersigned, the judge's opinion that Georgia law does not permit the finding of an actual conflict for simply making bad choices. So this is pretty significant. I mean, he is suggesting that she, or he's saying that she had a tremendous lapse in judgment, that she was unprofessional when she testified. Remember, she was getting pretty contentious, pretty fiery with the defense attorney, insisting that she was not on trial when, in fact, they were asking her questions because the judge was assessing whether she needed to be disqualified. And then also saying here that she made bad choices. And look, even though she's going to stay on the case, all of this, especially this language from the judge, and we're just skimming the opinion right now, I'm sure there's likely more, it's really a gift to former President Trump and his co-defendants, because they're not only going to fight this case on the merits, they fight it in the court of public opinion. Optics here matter. He has tried to undermine trust in the justice system. And if you have a judge who's overseeing a case, calling the prosecutor, again, unprofessional, saying that she made a bad decision, she had a lapse in judgment, and that is a lot of ammunition for the former president and his co-defendants.
And they will be using it, not only going forward in this case, in her prosecution effort, but on appeals. I mean, it's all laid out for them. In the order, Judge McAfee explained that disqualification of Fannie Willis is not a statutory standard, but a remedy in the public interest, that public prosecutors must serve the public interest rather than private or political interest. Well, she obviously had some private interest, but conflict of interest, the judge continued, is a factual standard. The fact that Mr. Wade was paid by the hour and could have an interest in billing many hours is not a violation. In fact, the judge then wrote, nor would a romantic relationship between prosecutors standing alone, typically implicate disqualification. Assuming neither prosecutor had the ability to pay the other as long as the relationship persisted. But it did, Judge, it did, obviously. Harvard Law Professor Emeritus Alan Dershowitz said the judge just overshot everything. Dershowitz claims Willis perjured herself and she conspired to commit perjury with Wade. In fact, quoting Dershowitz directly, who are we going to believe, the judge or your lying eyes? Those are the words from Dershowitz. We all know there was an actual conflict of interest here. He, the judge, just didn't have the guts to say it. And I'd predicted he wouldn't have the guts to say it. He has to live in Fulton County. The judge said some things that were very critical of her, but still, he should have removed her from the case. Now, again, if they took her off the case, if they removed her from the case, well, then what would happen is everything then would have to be restarted, because her being pushed aside would remove her entire office from the case. Then it had to be wait to be reassigned to another prosecutor. I pointed out to you that when she first brought this case in Fulton County, she was asking other prosecutors in Georgia, do you want to join them in my case? Because it involves all of Georgia, not just Fulton County. And not one prosecutor wanted to, shall I say, get into bed with her, because Nathan was already there. But Eli Honig, who is a CNN legal analyst, also characterized some of the judge's findings and rulings.
The big takeaway, Fannie Willis stays on the case. The DA's office keeps the case. The case can carry on. That is far and away the bold headline. They have survived, but not without substantial damage. I mean, there is some really stark language in this ruling. The judge calls out the DA's, quote, tremendous lack in judgment, the odor of mendacity. He says that the speech, the public speech she made in the church was, quote, legally improper. And the judge even says in the ruling, it may be time for a gag order on the DA because she keeps on making improper public statements. He leaves it out there. He doesn't say I'm issuing one, but he raises the possibility of a gag order on the DA. I mean, look, there's gag orders on Donald Trump.
Right.
Because we collectively fear that he may be tainting the jury pool. And now the judge floats the same possibility. So the DA's office has survived. The case survives. It will roll on. At what pace, we'll see. But there's some damage done here.
And, of course, don't forget in that judge's, or rather in Willis's church speech, she lambasted several, including a Fulton County commissioner and others, for criticizing her decision to hire her lover. And that term mendacity, saying the judge saying there's a certain mendacity here, let maybe give you an explanation of that. And I'm not a legal expert, but let's just look at the basic understanding of it. And it still says a judge, going along with Dershowitz, I will agree here, did not have the guts to carry out what he should have. Mendacity means the quality of being mendacious, untruthfulness, tendency to lie, an instance of lying and falsehood. So if the judge says that's all part of what he sees, and he still keeps her on the case, well, as Dershowitz said, he still has to live in that county. There's a ruling on another case involving Trump, special counsel Jack Smith claiming that Trump violated, of course, laws regarding classified info. That's right, the same thing we had with the Biden case and the Hur report. But that got dropped because he considered Biden too senile to stand trial. Trump's defense argues in the Jack Smith case they're trying to use the Espionage Act, and it's unconstitutionally vague, with a judge who was appointed by Trump, by the way, in the past, made a ruling that is upsetting libs who want Trump behind bars.
This was the worst possible outcome for the government, because if the judge had simply said, I agree with Donald Trump and I find that this is vague and I'm dismissing it, the government could have appealed it to the 11th Circuit, as they have done twice before and won twice before. And that is something that this judge is trying to avoid at all cost. But she also did not want to rule in favor of the government. So what she did is said, you know what, why don't you bring this up later? I think there's some real issues here. And so she sort of flagged that. And there will be a lot of complications if she deals with this after a jury is sworn in this case, because that is the key moment where double jeopardy attaches, and there are various legal consequences to that. So this is the worst possible decision for the government.
And you see why? Because the judge did, District Judge Eileen Cannon, who had been confirmed or rather appointed by Donald Trump when he was president, of course, had to go through the Senate for full confirmation to be a district judge. She didn't make it that clear and left the door open. In fact, after a day-long hearing, issued an order saying some of the arguments warrant, quote, serious consideration, but no judge ever found the statute unconstitutional. So she denied the motion that Trump and his team wanted to go through. But she left that door cracked open. That's what's upsetting the libs. How dare she leave a door halfway open? She should have slammed it shut, put bars over it, and say, Trump, you are now locked up for life. But she didn't. And here's an example of one of the other analysts from MSNBC on what they think of the judge's failure to do what they wanted.
Judge Cannon's failing to meet the moment here. Look, this is going to be one of the most monumental cases she's ever going to handle. There's been a number of cases over the last decade, all tied up with, you know, Donald Trump one way or another, where judges have had to put their name in a moment in history and say, here's my view on the law, right or wrong. Here's how I'm assessing it. She keeps punting. She keeps bobbing and weaving, trying to push it off onto somebody else to make the tough choice. She's trying to push off some of this into potentially being a jury issue, making 12 ordinary Americans try to evaluate things that lawyers far smarter than me argue over every single day, and I was going to stick it onto a jury. This is her job. She's going to have to rule on this as a matter of law, or she's going to be putting way too much burden on this jury.
Well, why can't a jury be allowed to see it? Well, if you listen to that tone of Bradley Moss, who'd also at one time been a prosecutor, the jury just wouldn't be smart enough to figure this out. We lawyers, we can figure it out. We lawyers who are anti-Trump, we've already figured it out. We're just trying to make sure the judge gets the point. And being a lawyer, we thought she would understand legalese. But she's not following the playbook. That's what it comes down to. And, of course, they want to make a big deal. As keep in mind, she was appointed by Trump. I'll come back to that in just a moment. The Trump lawyer, one of them, according to the Washington Post, was asked by the judge, you would agree that declaring a statute is unconstitutionally vague is quite an extraordinary step. So she was acknowledging this point in history, as you were hearing Bradley Moss accuse her, recognizing no other court has ever done that. In fact, she had made it clear that no court has ever, no judge has ever found the statute unconstitutional. Didn't want to be prematurely deciding now. Well, that's not the way they wanted to play the game. Because this means this case could then be kicked down the road and not actually happen until after the November election. Oh, that's right. That thing is still sitting on the calendar for November. And not only the date of the election, but everything leading up to it. And the left is busy trying to smear and slander Trump in any way they can, so they want all their ammunition in play right now. And this judge just didn't get it. Now, if this judge had been appointed by a Democrat, would that have made a difference? Maybe. Is she making this decision because she was appointed by Trump? I couldn't say. Can you? I know what the left is saying. They're already suggesting it. And in fact, if you go back as another review of what the judge decided, they're saying basically, I'm not going to decide. Here comes someone who is really scholarly, aloof, and a lot smarter than you and me. MSNBC's Lawrence O'Donnell.
Never occurred to anyone in a judicial confirmation hearing to ask the question, will you recuse yourself from criminal cases involving the president who appointed you? Because, of course, it's never happened in history. But here we are, and here the country is watching this grotesquerie of a Trump-appointed judge leaning in every way she possibly can in favor of the man who appointed her to her judgeship, the most glaring and poisonous conflict of interest you could ask for in a federal courtroom, because it also contains now this dynamic of her judicial future if Donald Trump were somehow to win the Electoral College again, which is obviously dangling in the air there in its totally obscene way.
Obscene way. See how scholarly and more informed and intelligent Lawrence O'Donnell is than you or me? No, we're not going to buy that. We're pulling the BS card on him, aren't we? In the next hour, more illegals invading our nation. We know that. So it's worth reviewing Missouri Senator Hawley questioning Mayorkas at one time. If anyone is here illegally, or even if they're here on a student visa preaching hate, should they not be deported just for that reason? It's going to be a walk-around answer. You know that. That's the next hour. But up next, Senator Rand Paul lays out how much pork and what kind of pork is in the latest budget proposal. You'd laugh, but it would hurt too much. Lock and load, ready on the right.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
Pigeons, they are everywhere, and they're very good at dive bombing freshly washed cars. Wellington Environmental reminds you those droppings are more than a nuisance, they can be a major health issue. Especially massive droppings on buildings or in parking garages. So who do you call to safely clean it up? You do what many hospitals, universities, public buildings already do. You call Wellington Environmental. Wellington Environmental has been dealing with all kinds of hazards for 35 years. Special people, special skills, special equipment. Wellington gets it done. So to avoid health issues ranging from pigeon droppings to mold to chemical leaks, contact Wellington, 314-644-4930, 644-4930. WellingtonSTL.com. Wellington Environmental, your world cleaner, better, safer. Be well with Wellington.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps in the afternoon.
Horace, Americans individually have lost over $4,000 in income and over $7,000 where you have a household with both parents working.
It shouldn't be, it's the economy, stupid. We should just say, stupid! It's the economy. Unbelievable the devastation that Americans are feeling.
Tim Jones and Chris Arps, weekdays at 3:30
on News Talk STL.
What if everything you thought and believed to be true about owning and buying your home turned out to be wrong?
Straightforward, objective advice on the right way to make the most out of every dollar you put into your home.
We're the only country that has one of those. Most other countries, considering like Canada, the UK, they don't have long-term fixed-rate mortgages like that. They're all variable-rate mortgages.
HomeWise with Michael Midget, Sunday mornings at 9 on News Talk STL.
Great news for my sponsor, Napoli C. And it's no surprise to me nor hundreds who have dined there. The first time I entered, it was clear Napoli C is unique. The decor, the fish, imaginative cocktails. And, of course, Napoli C is right next door to Napoli 3 in St. Charles. Napoli 2 is in Town and Country. The original Cafe Napoli is in Clayton. And I'm honored to endorse each of them. Visit any of the Cafe Napolis.
This is News Talk STL.
Got a black magic woman. Got a black magic woman.
This is Larry Connors USA. Larry Connors USA.
Pork barrel spending elicits images of politicos, fists full of cash to be passed out to the special interests. Pork barrel spending sounds bad and smells worse. Pork barrel spending is the original sin of Congress that big government types can't rid themselves of, can't rinse themselves clean of. Pork barrel spending is the grease that eases billions and trillions of deficit dollars to follow. What did our founders have to say about pork barrel spending, about earmarks? Well, the Constitution is quite clear. Taxation and spending are only allowed if they are for the general welfare. Justice Story, in our history, ruled that the General Welfare Clause was not a general grant of unlimited powers, but rather a limiting clause that meant that government taxation and spending must be for the general welfare of the people, not for parochial interest. It's not for a sex club in Philadelphia. It has to be for the general welfare of all people in the United States.
All people in the United States, but pork barrel spending, that is something that, as Senator Rand Paul said, is a pork fest of epic proportions. Now, of course, earmark spending has made up less than 3% of the proposed government budget, and yet still those that are inside are basically highly controversial. You heard him also use the term earmarks. That's the other term that's been used for them. Let's review those terms very quickly. Pork belly spending basically refers to a metaphor as the appropriation of government spending for localized projects secured solely or primarily to direct money and get votes down the road to a particular area. Every member of Congress has its district that they want to get something special for, or as a senator to get something for the state overall. But especially the congressional districts. I mean, what can I bring home to the people of my district so I can campaign on it? And then you start breaking down some of these things and taking a look at, and again, whether you call it pork or you call it earmark. Earmark is basically saying the same thing, that money is going to be set aside and approved just for this particular project, which brings the question again, is it benefiting the society as a whole, or is it just a minutia and strictly done for VOTES. Maybe we need to spend money on learning the spelling of that word, which I thought would be taught in our schools now, but maybe they're too full of DEI pork belly spending already. We'll never get it taught whatever level you want to try. But here's Senator Rand Paul with one of his examples.
There are 600 pages of earmarks in this bill, over 6,000 earmarks, pork barrel spending for which the Constitution does not approve. It adds up to $12 billion. It'd be difficult to choose which single earmark is the worst, but here's some of the top 10. $4 million for a waterfront walkway in New Jersey. You heard that right. $4 million for a walkway, for a fancy new boardwalk to help New Jersey's shoreline compete with Staten Island's. We're $34 trillion in debt, and they're going to take money that's supposed to be for the general welfare to help one specific town.
That's not the general welfare when you're helping one town. We're going to build a boardwalk, so they have a nice, pretty boardwalk. Now, of course, this will also attract visitors, so for the town, it's not just for the town residents. If you go there, now you got a brand new boardwalk to walk on, and maybe that will entice you to go. You see how beautiful it is? Here's an opportunity to go. So it all pays off, supposedly. But sometimes you say, why doesn't the local government take care of it? And they could. They could in that particular case. Rand Paul went on to point out, listen, they've got enough money and people in that area. They could build their own boardwalk if they wanted. But why not take it from the federal dollars? I mean, after all, I mean, the $7.3 trillion budget proposed by Biden, the biggest in history. Meanwhile, our national deficit is $34 trillion. So why not just, you know, it's chump change for a boardwalk, right? And then you've got in Detroit, he mentioned they have money allocated inside one of the bills for a private company that builds the floats, that builds floats for the Thanksgiving parade they have. Now, this is a private company and they're building floats. Why are you going to give them money? Oh, you don't need to ask. Just understand they need it. And the congressman that represents that particular area of Detroit that was going to be getting the money, or at least the company itself, they'll probably find a way, as Rand Paul was describing earlier, grease whoever helped them get the bill passed so they don't have to spend and lose money in building floats for the Thanksgiving Day parade. Hey, we're doing it for everybody. We're building this parade float for everybody to see and applaud and enjoy. Your private company. Take care of it if you want to do it or don't. And then Senator Rand Paul turns to another one, which he immediately says, you got enough problems and you want federal dollars to do what?
$500,000 for gardens in San Francisco. Now, I understand the smell is bad in San Francisco from the human feces, from the waste, from the trash, from the litter, from the drug addicts that strew all of their needles across the place. It's a bad deal in San Francisco. But you know what? They need to clean their city up. They don't need to be asking for taxpayers in Kentucky and around the country to plant flowers for them to obscure the smell of their problem because they've let their city go to rot and ruin. $1 million to a nonprofit in Minnesota to build a coffee shop for refugees. Think about this. You've just come to this country. Many of these are good people. They're some of the best Americans. They just got here, but we want to teach them about America. So instead of teaching them frugality of someone who's new that doesn't have much money, that you go to the grocery store and for 26 cents a cup, you can make your own coffee. Instead, we say, why don't we give $1 million to a refugee center so they can have a coffee shop and serve up $7 lattes to teach the immigrants that this is what's great about America.
Yeah, this is great. You come to America, you get a $7 latte paid for by the federal tax dollars. They're already getting a lot from federal tax dollars anyway, are they not? To the extent that we have Americans in this country right now, American citizens of various colors, various races, religions, geographic locations, only two genders, but they are living at or close to the poverty line as it is. And we keep hearing that Bidenomics is taking care of everything. It's not. I told you since the beginning of the week, the latest report out shows that everything continues to go up this month, or rather last month, compared to January. Now, what do you think the numbers are going to show for this month when it's all done? It's not going to be going down. If it does, it'd be by incrementals. That is not changing things, because keep in mind, every time they let you know how bad it is, how much you're paying, they still keep out core issues, the ones that you have to have, like food. Food is not included every time they give you inflation numbers and the cost of products and goods and services. Food is not included. How are you doing about not living with food? Are you eating bark off the trees or what? Or maybe you're buying dog food or cat food and you're eating that. There was a time there were complaints that Americans were doing that. Are we back to that state again? Because of this liberal spend everything on everything but what we need to? The inflation continues to go up and nobody's wages are keeping up with the inflation. The report I saw earlier that something like 80% of Americans believe they'll never be able to buy a home. At this rate, that's true. But Senator Rand Paul wants you to keep something in mind. Despite the things he's pointed out, like the San Fran Gardens, give me a break. You really, what's the purpose of the San Fran Gardens? If you provided the dollars they put it in, what do you think would happen? It'd be trashed immediately. Oh, there'd be plenty of manure, I'm sure, available in the garden. Keep things growing. But here's Senator Rand Paul making a point that should stick with you.
In a couple more weeks, they're coming back. And if there were 6,000 earmarks this week, I'm guessing they'll have 6,000 next week. It gets worse. It's leading to generalized inflation. So not only are they ignoring the general welfare clause, which means that spending and taxation is supposed to help everyone equally, has to be for a general cause, such as the national defense that we don't have for Maine or Rhode Island or Kentucky. The national defense is for everyone. It is a general cause. But when we spend it on parochial causes, when we run up this enormous deficit, it hurts us all generally. Inflation is a general punishment. So I would say this bill is not for the general welfare of the country. It is for the general punishment of the country, because it continues a $1.5 trillion deficit that leads to inflation that causes all of us to not be able to afford food, clothing, gasoline. That's what this is. This bill is an insult to the American people. The earmarks are all the wasteful spending that you could ever hope to see, and it should be defeated.
Yeah, it should be defeated. Should never been presented. But if they could slip it by, because they're going to do some handshakes in the back room, say, I'll do your deal if you'll do mine. Okay, we're good. Coming up, there's a boycott that's building against Tyson Foods, primarily because they're hiring so many illegals. Now, why are they hiring so many? And maybe you don't even know how many they've already got hired. We'll look at that when we continue.
You can connect with Larry on Twitter at Larry Connors USA.
I got an email which brought a smile. A woman named Mary wrote me, "We are purchasing a new roof from John Beale based on your recommendation." I thanked her then. I do it again now. Mary, I only endorse clients I believe in, and I've been a spokesman for John Beale for 10 years. It's all about trust. So if, like Mary, you need John Beale, trust me. Call 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
The United States Deputy Sheriff's Association is a national nonprofit and the largest non-governmental provider of services to law enforcement. The USDSA assists city, county, state, and federal agencies with free safety equipment donations and officer survival training, along with cash donations to families of law enforcement officers who perished in the line of duty, a citizen awareness program, and more. For more information on United States Deputy Sheriff's Association, please visit usdeputy.org.
I like supporting local companies that give back to the community. For more than 40 years, Vincent's Jewelers has helped raise more than $1.5 million for local charities. So I'm personally asking that when you're shopping for jewelry, give Vincent's a chance. And in turn, Vincent's will give even more to our community. On Olive, just east of 270. New specials every day on vincentsjewelers.com or Vincent's Facebook.
News, analysis, opinion.
USA, USA! That's a big game, man!
She's really losing control.
People in China didn't ask me about people mowing each other down in a mall.
This is News Talk STL.
It is their responsibility.
Hate is a metastasizing agent.
We're all keeping a close eye on this.
Illegal immigration is crazy right now.
The United States is not being overrun.
News Talk STL.
It is a crisis at the border without question.
At NewsTalkSTL.com.
This is moving season for many homeowners and businesses. Contact my sponsor, McGuire Moving and Storage. McGuire will come to you, give you a free, honest appraisal. McGuire, fully licensed, insured, local or long distance, with climate-controlled storage. McGuire Moving and Storage has the Larry Connors USA seal of approval. 314-241-0600. 241-0600. McGuire Moving. com.
This is News Talk STL. This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
So why does Tyson have these, what seems to be, immense hiring demands?
So it has a turnover rate of 40%, meaning 4 in 10 of its workers every year on its front, what it calls its frontline workers, the folks who are, you know, washing the chicken, looking for bones, packing it up into trays. Very few of them are going to stick around in the long term. So it needs to hire something like 52,000 people this year. It already employs about 42,000 immigrants and refugees, but it sees this part of the workforce as a particularly good one for immigrants. They like to stay. They've often come from very difficult situations, mm-hmm. and so the company is really investing in a lot of services for them, whether it's English language classes, certain child care services, to try and convince them, you know, come stay. You may make only $16.50 an hour to start, but this is a good job.
This is a good job at $16 an hour, picking through cuts of chicken, making sure there's no bones in it, cutting, washing, and so forth. Obviously monotonous, low-skilled work. No Americans apparently want it, is what Tyson is suggesting. There's been a world boycott on all Tyson food for some time, claiming that, and this is a claim, not my statement, those who are pushing a boycott worldwide is claiming the Tyson meats, all of them are poisonous. Now, again, that may be just more campaign rhetoric to try to get more people to turn off Tyson. Tyson, by the way, is owned by a majority of the stakes are held by insiders. But it did show some great profits with meat prices going up over COVID-19. And in the meantime, it's announced closing 6 U.S. chicken plants in the past year and laying off some corporate employees. They're closing down an Iowa pork plant that would have something like 1,200 workers. And yet at the same time, they're trying to staff a plant in Tennessee. So after closing the plant in Iowa, they're now trying to staff a plant in Tennessee, and they're looking to hire 52,000 migrants, as is referred to. It doesn't tell me if that's illegal, because they dissolved the word illegal so many ways. You can't say alien. You can't say illegal. Now you're not even supposed to say migrants. You're supposed to say newcomers. So maybe Tyson chose the word migrants, or this article by Newsweek chose it, because they knew if they said newcomers, it would say, yes, all these illegals will get a job. Well, if they're going to get a job, which is what many of them have come to the country for anyway, not asylum, then they'll have a job. Then they will start paying taxes. And maybe they'll get enough skill or education to get something better than working at Tyson chopping and butchering chickens. It is a starting position. The concern we need to have, obviously, is that a lot of these companies, and I'm not saying Tyson does it directly, but a lot of them have been found to have underage, basically minors, doing the same job, working around a lot of this slicing and dicing equipment, and they're certainly subjected to hazardous with the machinery, much less the chemicals being used to clean the floors and the blood from time to time. Scripps News reported, Tyson announcing this week it wants to hire some of the thousands of asylum seekers that are in New York City. So that tells me, yeah, they're going after illegals. And those who came here, if they're getting even $16.20 an hour, $16.50 an hour, and benefits such as legal aid, child care, temporary housing, well, they came to America for that. But then if they decide, well, this is real work. I don't want to work. I just want everything that comes with it. I want to go back to the hotel and sleep all day and let everybody bring food to me. Somebody else has to wash the chicken. With Tyson announcing this week it's going to close a plant in Perry, Iowa, because they say there's been a demand for some products. That's why it shut down 6 plants in the past year. I don't know if that says the worldwide boycott is working or not, but it does tell me that a lot of folks are getting upset. I had a very loyal listener write me yesterday saying, I'm sure you saw this, you're aware of it, and we are going to boycott Tyson. I never encourage a boycott. That's up to you to make a decision on. But I told her, yes, I would be reporting on it today. I had it yesterday. I just didn't have time. There are too many things going on. But we're going to see if it's going to work out this time. And again, if Scripps News is reporting Tyson wants to hire some of the thousands of asylum seekers in New York City, and they want them for a Tennessee plant, hello, Tennessee. They're coming your way, a whole lot of them. And to the mayor of New York City and the governor, whew, goodbye. Let's see how that plays out. Now, I have a question for you, and getting even into this question, it's dicey because there's some validity you might be able to post around this concern and the question, but I think right now it's being used primarily as a propaganda tool. Can you make pain, you suffering pain, a racist issue? Well, Advil launched a campaign last year pushing that. Let's update it coming up.
You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want to give someone something which they will really enjoy? Give them a Cafe Napoli gift card. You pick the amount. They pick which of the Cafe Napolis they want to visit. Cafe Napoli in Clayton. Cafe Napoli in Town and Country. Napoli 3 on the streets of St. Charles. Or right next door. Napoli C, the Napoli gift card. It's the perfect gift for anyone or your entire office. Cafe Napoli. Cafe Napoli.
This is Larry Connors, USA.
Larry Connors, USA.
Believe me when I say
I'm in pain. Believe me when I say,
and believe me when I say,
my pain is real. Believe me when I say,
I'm in pain. Believe
Believe me when I say.
And believe me when I say.
My pain is real.
That is part of the Advil Pain Equity Project they launched in 2023. Now, that was a clip of about 15 seconds. We butted it back to back so you could hear it again a second time. All of those speaking are black. Those of different colors also suffer pain, and they also complain from time to time. We're not getting our pain addressed correctly by medical staff at the hospital, and we're not getting what we need when we go to the pharmacy. They're not giving us what we need. And, of course, if it's a prescription drug and you don't have any meds for it, I mean a script for it, well, then you're not going to get it anyway. But if you go to some of the pharmacies, and I'm looking at a picture here, and I don't know the source of this. Andrew, my boots on the ground in Chicago, sent this to me, and it says it's some boxes, labels, I should say, put up along a display of Advil at one end of a display counter. One says 3 in 4 black people suffer from pain because there is bias in how pain is treated. Another point says pain equity occurs when, it's so small, kind of make it up, but basically when everyone can get full treatment for their pain. And there's some others like that. Now, as I said, Advil began this campaign, the Pain Equity Project, in 2023 with the intent of addressing racial bias in healthcare. I'm not going to deny that racial bias exists or doesn't exist. I think it's very possible it does, certainly depending on where you live. Access to healthcare is another part of it. But this multi-year initiative, which they claim will help mitigate discrimination in diagnosis and treatment of pain, debuted with what you're listening to, that Believe My Pain campaign. Now it's going to be showing up more often in a debate over racism. My problem with it is it's just creating another division, another division. Everyone suffers pain, and they don't think they get the treatment they need. I had a grandmother who suffered immense pain, and she said, the doctor won't give me what I need. They tell me just go get something like Advil or Aleve or aspirin. I want more. Well, the woman is white as snow, but her pain was as real to her as it is to anyone else who's suffering. She wasn't being denied because she was a white woman for whatever reasons. The doctor thought we cannot give her anything else, or they just wouldn't accept and understand how bad it was for her. It hurts you when you have a relative, a loved one, who is in pain, and you, especially if it's a child, you do anything to alleviate their pain. You take them to the doctor repeatedly, and they keep giving just basic script that doesn't seem to do anything. But of course you have to be worried, and that's where we got into OxyContin, got everything screwed up when they were handing it out like sugar candy, people overdosing on it. This Advil Believe My Pain campaign involved contributions from a doctor and others, and it is igniting a debate on racial discrimination and whether it truly exists in healthcare. I'm willing to say there probably are cases that it does exist. But Advil doing this is just accelerating again. You're not going to get the treatment. You're not going to get the education. You're not going to get the job because of color, ethnicity, or whatever. In this country, I'm not saying we're totally past it, but we're farther along than we've ever been, and we need to continue that. But every time you throw something like this, many people start saying, well, that's it. That's the last straw. I've done everything I can, and no one's getting it anyway. So here's what Advil did using the Morehouse School of Medicine, which is a black university college study. The study revealing that 3 in 4 black people suffering from pain believe there is a bias in how pain is diagnosed and treated. Now, I don't know what Dr. Carson, neurologist, would say, if he would agree with that or not. And it, again, if I took four white people and asked them, Do you think your pain was properly diagnosed and treated? I might find three and four say no. I might find two. I might find one. It all depends on where you're going, right, and how big the sample. This study highlighted apparently that only 51% of black people suffering from pain feel supported by their health care professional. You know, the option then is if they can, get another doctor, but some cannot do that geographically and cost. As part of the initiative, Advil has promised to award grants to the Morehouse School of Medicine and others for development of patient resources and a course on pain equity for medical students. You know what? That's okay. That's fine. That's not teaching DEI. It's pointing out that, you know, don't just simply dismiss it when a patient of any color is complaining that stuff is not working. I need something stronger. Did the doctor do the proper diagnosis? Are they looking at something that is really helping them? Or are they maybe now overprescribing and getting them hooked on a drug they will see ruin their lives? On Twitter, one user said, and I'm quoting from it, supposedly people say that doctors think black people that ask for help with pain management are looked at by the doctors as being potential drug addicts more than they see white people. I live in West Virginia. The pharmacist already thinks everyone is an addict. Now, that issue, unfortunately, does ring true in some areas, regardless of color. You would imagine around San Francisco, a lot of people coming in asking for some pain relief of some type. They're already addicted, or they're looking for using it in some other way. That's why some of these used to be simple Sudafed drugs for allergies. So, well, you got to go to the pharmacy, and they've got to pull it out of a vault and hand it to you, and you have to basically sign and say, I'm not buying this to make meth. Another user slammed the medicine brand itself, Advil, saying, pain isn't racist. Advil is jockeying for more sales to certain races. That is a point to be made as well. If we recall, when everybody was talking about stopping obesity, and then the idea came up, well, maybe we need to stop these great big sodas because kids or adults drink them. They get obese, get diabetes. Or maybe dealing with smokes. So if you stop presenting menthol cigarettes, then you won't have as many black buyers, more black buyers apparently smoking like menthol. I don't know any of them that do, but I guess some do. One user wrote on the platform, you're completely missing the point. It is well documented the medical community does not listen to POC, people of color, when it comes to pain. This is one of the reasons more people of color die in childbirth. Pain is the same, but only some people are typically believed. The women of color dying in childbirth might be related to inadequate prenatal care or other things as well. That's just a statement thrown out there. But I might take this option or opportunity to point out that there are a lot of kids that die because mom went to the abortion clinic. And majority of those are minority people of color. Coming up, Senator Josh Hawley, all the attack against Mayorkas. You're going to love this. And, of course, I remind you, as always, you know our pledge, built right out of what you say to the flag, one nation under God.